Let's have a short prayer together. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be pleasing to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, I will start out with a little confession. My printer failed me, and I failed it. My printer prints from the last page up, and so after I had read and reread my message, I grabbed the pages and put them together and brought them here to church with me, and then noticed that I am missing pages 1 and 2. So please be kind. I will do my very best. I have a favorite writer and preacher, Robert Fulham, who's a Unitarian minister. Thank you. And he wrote a book that I highly recommend. It's a short little book called Things I Learned in Kindergarten. And in it, Fulham describes the lessons that we learn as little children. Play nicely with each other, share what you have, wash your hands before it's time to eat, say nice things to one another, listen to your teacher. All those little lessons that we have to learn as a community when we're young, so that when we grow older, we'll know how to live among each other in community. And those lessons are horizontal. They go from us to someone else. I think Fulham, in other works, did a good job of describing what I would call the vertical lessons. Vertical lessons go from God to us and back up. So those lessons are the ones that I want to talk to you about today. Now, I came to ministry later in life, in my 50s, and I had had a successful career at AT&T, and most people would have looked at me and thought I was pretty self-assured. And in many ways, I was, because experience teaches you how to deal with problems like missing your pages. But there were a lot of new experiences in seminary that I don't think you encounter anywhere else or in few other places. And one of them was the summer I spent as a chaplain at a local nursing facility in Milwaukee. Now, this facility had services that ranged from independent living to assisted living to skilled nursing wards that held a lot of persons with dementia to wards for people on ventilators and even hospice. So while I was there, I learned how to deal with people in all of those situations. I was assigned during the course of my regular day to a dementia unit and to a ventilator unit. And there I learned some of the greatest lessons of my life. My first lesson came from a woman named June. June was a young woman in her 30s. She had suffered a stroke and could not breathe on her own, and so she was on a ventilator. Now, a vent means that you can't verbalize unless someone does what they call lowers the cuff. They reduce the amount of oxygen that the vent is pushing into you so that you can breathe some of it out. Joan could move her hands to change the TV channel and do other things that were physically related from her waist up, but she could not breathe on her own. She could whisper, though, when one of the nurses lowered her cuff. So I was pretty uncertain about visiting people on the vent ward. I did not know what to say to people who couldn't hold a conversation with me. But I went in to see June one day, and her cuff was down for a little while, and we were able to talk. June wanted so desperately to go home and be with her family, but the staff knew that that would likely never happen because her family was not able to provide for her physical care. So when I prayed with June, I often prayed for God to grant her endurance and patience. But I never forgot to pray for a recovery, for her return home, even though I knew that would take a miracle. After all, we worship a God of miracles. Peter was called to walk on the water, and he did. You never know. But whenever I walked out of June's room, it was with a deep sense of sadness and distress that such a young woman could be struck so suddenly. And I promised myself that I would get my own affairs in order that summer. I would talk to my children about my personal wishes if ever my own life came to such a pass. I didn't want to live on a ventilator. So I downloaded the paperwork for a living will and a healthcare power of attorney. And as uncomfortable as it was, I talked about it at breakfast one morning when my children and I were together for my son's wedding. I wanted them to be informed about what I want. I didn't want them to have to make decisions living in a vacuum or from guilt or even from love that were counter to my own wishes. So lesson number one from the nursing home, be ready for disaster. Lesson two, just show up. Down the hall from June on that same vent unit, Robert lay in his bed, unable to move or breathe without assistance, struck down by ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. His wife Gloria visited every day at lunchtime. On the bulletin boards in his room were pictures of their wedding, of the two of them in outrageous Halloween costumes, of Robert's classic GTO muscle car, pictures of a life that was just memories, a life that would never come back. Even with his vent cuff down, Robert could not speak. His vocal cords were paralyzed by the disease. His eyes did all the talking. They followed Gloria, full of love for the active, still beautiful woman who was his wife. She was what kept him alive, more than the ventilator. She was his reason for living. When I would enter the room, there was often a companionable silence. I think Gloria had run out of things to say to Robert, who couldn't hold a conversation. But it wasn't awkward. She was present with him, even in silence. Well, in our chaplaincy orientation, we interns were told that presence was all that was required. We seldom have words or prayers or even Bible readings to address the situation that someone like Robert was in. But we could be there, present, human to human. We could be honest, as I had to be with Robert one day when Gloria was away at a doctor's appointment of her own. I came into the room expecting her to be there as a buffer, as someone to whom I could talk, and no Gloria. So I stood by Robert's bedside, silent for a few long seconds, and then I looked at him and said, "I don't know what to say to you, Robert." He blinked. The only thing he still could do. And I think it was to encourage me. So I continued talking to him about my CPE orientation and how the time was going and how scary it could be to approach people that I couldn't communicate with, about my own sense of inadequacy and how it tended to overwhelm me sometimes and make me afraid. Robert's eyes never left my face. I knew that he was really hearing me, and how I wished that he could speak to me just for a moment. I asked him to pray for me and all the chaplains, and he blinked. When my babbling finally ran down, I opened my Bible and prayed the 91st Psalm. "Those who love me, I will deliver. I will protect those who know my name. When they call to me, I will answer them. I will be with them in trouble." Then I sat down in Gloria's chair for a little while in silence, breathing along with Robert's ventilator, feeling for God's presence, and letting go of my own fear enough to let my presence be there too. There were 11 other men in the boat when Peter stepped out on the water. 11 men who probably sat there thinking, "He's crazy. No one can do that. He's going to drown." But in the presence of God, wondrous things can happen. So lesson number 2. When someone is suffering, when they're alone and need a friend, but you're scared to be there because you don't know what to say, just be present. Show up. Let God take care of the rest. Lesson number 3. Enjoy the little things. Florence was a staunch Roman Catholic woman in her 80s. She had a bit of dementia, but was lucid most of the time. She was a resident on the skilled nursing unit and could only get around in a wheelchair. She showed up at Mass every Wednesday and at the Rosary prayer time every Friday. Sometimes it was only Florence and the prayer leader on a given Friday, but you could always hear her raspy voice giving the response, "Holy Mary, Mother of God." One evening when I was on call and staying overnight in the little chaplain's apartment, I decided to walk down the hall and sample a few of the nighttime activities. There was Florence with one of the activities directors and 3 other ladies playing Wii bowling. Now, I'd seen it done, but I had never used a Wii. Nevertheless, I came in and asked the creative resources person if I could help in any way, and she assigned me to a resident who was able to hold the controller and swing her arm, but couldn't figure out when to press the button to let go. So every time it was Betty's turn to bowl, I would sit next to her and say, "Let go now, Betty," and she would bowl. But Florence was the Wii bowling star. She would adjust the angle of the ball with the arrows on the controller and really let it swing. When Betty got tired of bowling, the creative resources person had me sit in for her. And Florence whipped me, but good. And we laughed and shared a moment of joy about it. So after that, whenever I came down the hall for visits and saw Florence, I would waggle my finger at her and tell her I needed a rematch. And she would and I would grin at each other. You see, even a life of trouble and suffering has its moments of joy. Cling to them, savor them, store them up, and when you're down, bring them out to look at them again. Lesson number 3, enjoy the little things. Lesson number 4, get ready. Al was not on either of the units I was assigned to. He was a resident in one of the assisted living apartments. Al used a walker and hauled along an oxygen tank. I met him when I went down to the dining room on my first on-call night, and the dining room manager seated me at his table. And after that, I would often hear a "Hi, Nancy," and see Al's big smile in the downstairs common area or a hallway, and always before Wednesday worship. One day during a Bible study that I sat in on, Al mentioned that he suffered from a heart disease. His heart was bumping along quite erratically, and he shared that there was no real treatment or cure. He would just have to live with it until he died. Then he looked at me, and although I was approaching 60, I was the youngest one in the group by at least a decade. And he said, "But I'm ready to go anytime. I like my life and I'm having fun, but I'm ready. It's important to be ready, Nancy." Well, I have to tell you, it's been a lot of years since I really considered my own mortality. Back when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it's 28 years ago now, I had to face that mortality head on. But Al made me ask myself, am I ready? Have I really prepared myself to meet God? You may think that's a silly question coming from a woman in ministry, but I'm going to share a simple truth with you. Quite often, pastors and seminarians study about God and talk about God and read about God. But we're not often asked to talk to God and be with God. to have the kind of personal encounter with Jesus that Peter had, to step out of the boat and walk, focused on the one who will keep us from sinking. It's very easy to develop an intellectual approach to God and lose your personal relationship with God. So when Al challenged me, I really had to stop and ask myself, am I ready? Like Al, I like my life, and I'm having fun. But like Al, I want to be ready if my time on earth is over. I want to be ready to walk across the water to him. Like the old gospel hymn says, I want to look over Jordan and see a band of angels coming for to carry me home. Lesson number 4, get ready. Lesson 5, fear not. I was a living, walking, breathing bag of fear for much of my time as a chaplain intern, afraid that my classmates and supervisor would tear apart my weekly case studies and verbatims, afraid to discuss my emotions, which is a big part of CPE, afraid of dementia, afraid to see the fear in someone else and not know how to help. Like Peter, I tended to focus on the sea of troubles before me and not on the one who would calm the sea. There are over 100 verses in the Bible that state, do not be afraid, do not fear. They begin in Genesis when God speaks to Abram. Do not be afraid, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. And they run all the way through to Revelation. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Do not be afraid. Do not fear. Fear not. Over and over. And easy to say. Easy to cite the Bible. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But hard, very, very hard, to keep your eyes on Jesus and not on the crashing waves. Now, I'm not talking about pathological fear, the kind that comes from chemical imbalance or deep trauma and needs medical care. I'm talking about the everyday fears that most of us live with. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough, pretty enough, young enough, old enough. The litany of ways that we get put down and that we put ourselves down. The reasons we all give for failing to follow the call. The reasons I've given. I have no easy answer to fear, no verse that will save you, no story that will make you brave enough to face your own fear. All I know is this. When Jesus calls me to step out of the boat, I have to go. I have to put first one foot and then the other on the water, and I have to get out of the boat and focus on Jesus, or I'll sink. I can't let the others who are huddling back in the boat, also afraid but not willing to act to risk it, hold me back. Yes, Peter lost his focus and began to sink. Yes, Peter denied Jesus 3 times and wept bitterly over his failure. But in the end, Jesus told him, "You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." You see, God is faithful, and God provides. One day in the first week of my chaplaincy internship that summer, I was walking down the hall of the dementia unit, knowing that I needed to make visits and wondering what in the world I could do or say to reach these people. My bad. B was shuffling along the hallway in her wheelchair, muttering to herself as she often did, her head down and seemingly focused on her goal to get off the unit. B was an escape artist. I didn't see any nursing staff around, so I casually walked over, bent down, and said, "Hi, Bea, I'm Chaplain Nancy. Do you need any help?" She looked up at me, and for a tiny little moment, There was a flicker of understanding in her eyes. She reached out and took my hand in hers and raised it to her mouth, and then she kissed my hand. It was the most blessed moment of my summer, the sweetest, most wonderful moment of benediction that I think I've ever received, and the single moment of clarity that Bea had all the time I was there. It was a God moment, an affirmation that even though the seas are stormy, Jesus is there to keep us from sinking. It kept me going. I learned a lot that summer, more than I can put into one sermon. But that moment was a defining one for me. My most important lesson from the nursing home is this, from the first letter of John. God is love. Perfect love casts out fear. So do not be afraid. Do not fear. Fear not. When you hear the call, get out of the boat and start walking. And keep your eyes on Jesus. You won't regret it.